Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Centered Loving. I'm your host, Jim Brown. And as always, I want to tell you that you're safe. No harm can come to you in this space. And each and every week, my goal is always to bring more love into your life, more happiness, more joy, compassion, peace, and abundance. I'm asking you, as always, to listen to this show with the goal of taking one thing, only one, and implementing it into your daily life. And particularly with today's show, because we're going to talk about 32 tips for what love is. So let's get going. The opening quote today is by Franklin Jones, and it is very simple. Love doesn't make the world go round. Love is what makes the ride worthwhile. Now, I thought what I'd do today is we always start with the what I hope to be is something that's funny. And so we'll give you an explanation of hell. And this was by a chemistry student. There's an actual question given on a University of Arizona chemistry midterm, and the answer by the student. So this was the bonus question. Is hell exothermic? I'm not a chemistry guy, which means giving off heat, or endothermic, which means absorbing heat. Most of the students wrote proofs of their beliefs using Boyle's law, which is gas cools when it expands and heats when it's compressed, or some variant of that. However, one student wrote this. First, we need to know how the mass of hell is changing in time. So, we need to know the rate at which souls are moving into the hell and the rate at which they're leaving, which is highly unlikely. I think we can safely assume that once a soul gets to hell, it will not leave. Therefore, no souls are leaving. As for how many souls are entering hell, let's take a look at the different religions that exist in the world today. Most of these religions state that if you are not a member of their religion, you will go to hell. Since there's more than one of these religions, and since people do not belong to more than one religion, we can project that all souls go to hell. With birth and death rates as they are, we can expect that the number of souls going into hell will increase exponentially. Now, we look at the rate of change in the volume of hell because Boyle's law states that in order for the temperature and for the pressure in hell to stay the same, the volume of hell has to expand proportionately as souls are added. Now, this gives us two possibilities. Number one, if hell is expanding at a slower rate than the rate at which souls enter hell, then the temperature and the pressure in hell will increase until all hell breaks loose. Or, number two, if hell is expanding at a rate faster than the increase of souls in hell, then the temperature and pressure will drop until hell freezes over. So, which is it? If we accept the postulate given to me by Teresa during my freshman year that it will be a cold day in hell before I sleep with you, and take into account the fact that I slept with her last night, then number two must be true. And thus, I am sure hell is exothermic and has already frozen over. Now, the corollary of this theory is that since hell is frozen over, it follows that it is not accepting any more new souls, and therefore it is extinct, leaving only heaven, thereby proving the existence of a divine being, which explains why last night Teresa kept shouting, "Oh my God!" Needless to say, this student received an A+. So, what do you think of that one? I like it. Whether you do or not, I don't know. The shadow knows. But anyhow, let's do some commercials, if you will. I've mentioned before that I'm going to be speaking on a cruise out of Los Angeles, a 7-day Mexican Riviera cruise. There'll be, from my understanding, there'll be 20 speakers, and it's called Spirit of Love, and it's February 14th to February 21st. Now, that's a Saturday, so it's a round trip out of Los Angeles, goes to Cabo San Lucas, Puerto Vallarta, and Mazatlan. And if you go to, I don't think you need the W's, but I'll give them to you, www.lovecruise2015.com, you'll get all the details. You can look there, and then the two of you can decide, or the one of you can decide whether you want to come. When you fill that application out, it'll ask who recommended you, and you have to give my name. So I'm looking forward to it because this is the kind of thing I want to do. I'm an entertainer. I'm a speaker. And to me, there's nothing like getting in front of a live audience. I've been doing this radio show for almost 2 years. It is totally different than being in front of a live audience. And when I tell this story about about hell in front of a live audience, they go nuts, and I can play and play with it. So I'm really excited about this because this is the kind of thing I want to do. And we've been doing this heart-centered loving show for almost 2 years, and this is the kind of passion I have for the topics we're talking about. Now, I'm going to be giving three talks. One will be on what love is and what love isn't. It'll be similar to what we're doing today, but they're all 90-minute talks, and they're interactive. Number two, self-acceptance and self-love. And third will be the power of forgiveness to heal. Also, I'll be doing life coaching there too. So if you want, if you have any questions, you can email me at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com, or you can just call me. It's 818-348-8266. And that's in the Pacific time zone. And I now am expanding my base of friends on Facebook. So I have people on Facebook in Holland, in Western Australia, France, Mexico, England. Anyway, the next commercial. Every week, practically, I mention Terry Cole Whitaker and her book from 1988, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. Next Tuesday, Terry is going to be our guest. So she and I will be on together, and we've chatted for about 20 minutes putting this together. And it was just amazing because it was like we knew each other forever. And I'm really excited about it. Just you guys will talk. I hope you call in. I always schedule the show for an hour and a half, so I don't have to end it exactly at 3 o'clock. And I can always extend it longer while we're doing it. That's the beauty of doing this like as computer radio, whatever the heck we want to call it. So if you have questions you want me to ask her and you don't want to call in, again, email me those. It's jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. Hopefully that's easy to remember. But I'm really excited about talking to Terry next week. And she sent me her introduction. I tell you, I would have been intimidated if I had known the credentials this woman has before I asked her. I mean, she's been on all kinds of television shows and et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I'm excited about next week. Just want to let you know about that. Let's get going into the show. Now, we talk about love a lot, and today I want to talk about it again because to me, love is the most important thing that there is in life. If we're not going to love, what's the point of being alive? Is it to make money? Is it to have a house, a car, a boat, you know, all of this stuff? And even though love is the source of the most joy and happiness we have, it's also the source of the most pain we ever have. Now, before we get into love per se, I want to tell you, number one, you all know that life is messy. So obviously, since love is part of life, love is going to be messy too. So just get it out of your head, get it out of your heart that, you know, it's got to be a certain way, it's going to be perfect. Things never go the way you want them to go. They'll go that way for a while, and then all of a sudden you get whacked in the back of the head with this, that, or the other thing. You got to let all of that go. Being a human being is a very imperfect existence. So stop asking for or expecting things in your life to be perfect. What we're going to look at today are a bunch of tips that hopefully will allow you to live in more joy and more happiness and more love. The last program, which very few of you listened to, I talked about the things not to do, the things that create the obstacles, and you can always go to the, whatever that file is called, and listen to that show. So the first one, well, before I get into it, you know, every single one of us has had our heart broken. Every single one of us. Now, what you see a lot of times when people get their heart broken, and I'm going to talk specifically about divorce, is one partner divorces the other one, and the one that's been hurt, very often, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a man or a woman, it happens both ways, the one that's been hurt, that's been rejected, thinks somehow, and they can't, they won't identify this, that if I heap 10 times as much pain on you as you heaped on me, that'll heal my pain. And we all know that creating pain for another person will never heal your pain. And more importantly, those of you who are going through separation or through a divorce, never, ever, ever make your children choose between you and your spouse. Always. That's their mother. That's their father. No matter what he or she has done, don't badmouth them. Don't make those kids make an unbelievably excruciating decision of who do I give my loyalties to. You need to be able to do this in a way that everybody can do it respectfully and lovingly. I suggest to you who are getting a divorce, if you get a divorce, go out to dinner when the divorce is final. Say thank you. We had some great time together. We changed. It's over. I want to thank you for what you gave me. Why do you do this? The same reason you do forgiveness. Because when you do this, it's for you, okay? So that's just one thing. Please, you have to learn how to heal the pain in your heart. You can do that, but don't ever try and inflict pain on another person because it causes more pain to you. So the first thing I want to talk to about is how we I'm back. At least I hope I'm back. Oh, yeah, there, here I am. I'm on here. I touched something on my headset cord and disconnected this, so I'm very sorry. First thing I want to talk about is when we're in a relationship, tell each other every day what I love about you is, and you fill in the blank. And the reason that's so vital to a relationship staying in love is that you're going to find what you look for. And when we are in love, or what a lot of us would call in lust, we only see the good things in the other person. But then we do this thing called get married, and then we take our rose-colored sunglasses, which I suggest you all go out and buy a pair of rose-colored sunglasses. Get rid of the black sunglasses, because after we get married and we look and we see, look at this. These sunglasses, you know, you did this wrong and that wrong and the other thing wrong, and then all we see is the things we don't like about him or her, or that they don't do right, according to me. I'm the king of the world. I'm the queen of the world. No, we don't want to do that. Because whatever we focus on is what we're going to find. And love is about focusing on the love. Remember, we are all imperfect. Life is messy and love is messy. So look for the thing you love in him or her, and tell him or her every day. Or at least once a week. You do it the way you want to do it. Number two, find out how the other person knows they're loved. We can do it visually, auditorily, kinesthetically. Rosemary and I went away for a weekend, and we went to different places once, and when we got back, she had bought me a gift. And I realized, aha! That's how she knows she's loved, when she gets a gift. For me, it's like, well, I want a hug, I want a kiss, I want to be told, I love you. Now, as she leaves in the morning, every single morning, this just started a couple months ago, she says, bye, have a good day. I say, bye, have a good day. And the last thing she says is, I love you. Well, we all know that one day this marriage or this relationship is going to end. Well, what better than to have the memory that the last thing you heard him or her say to you is, I love you. So, know how each person knows that they're loved. Because if you do it the way you're loved, and I'm not loved the same way, I don't know you're telling me you love me or showing me you love me or whatever. Number three, this is critical. Obviously, I think they're all critical. They wouldn't be on my list. We know every single relationship in life is constantly changing because we are constantly changing. So, therefore, in order for a relationship to work, we have to be constantly working on it. Sounds simple, doesn't it? But how many times have you heard somebody, a couple that gets separated, and one of them says, or both of them say, we grew apart. Well, we're both going to grow, we're both going to change, so we have to constantly be in touch with each other. It's just like calling in, checking in, calling in. What do you need? What do you want? What's changing? I can't read minds. You know, we've only been married 47 years, and somehow my wife thinks I can read her mind. I can't read her mind. So tell me what you want, or tell me what you need. Next one I have on my list here is to ask, what are your top five values? And if I tell you what my top five values are, and you tell me what your top five values are, and how we define that they're being met, then we have the opportunity to impact each other and help them realize what's important to them. But let's say we start a relationship and we go out on a date and we say, well, what are your top five values? And you say, well, my number one value is security. And I say, well, my number one value is adventure. Do you think that we're going to have a good relationship? There's no way. So it's good to know those things ahead of time, isn't it? Somebody is in the chat room, and I'm a guy. I can't chat and talk at the same time. So there, the top five values. The next thing, which I think is easiest in the beginning of a relationship, but is mandatory in every relationship, and I think it is one of the poorest things any one of us do, and that is set boundaries. We don't know how to set boundaries. Now, who comes out of the chute setting boundaries? A baby, when the baby is born, right? As soon as the baby is born, the baby starts crying to find out, well, what happens when I start crying? And then it finds out all these different things and how it can communicate, and it finds out where the boundaries are. And kids are constantly testing us to see, where are the boundaries? Well, there's boundaries everywhere, and you have to stand up and say, no, I won't accept this. Now, I found it very interesting, and this is my point of view. Those of you who are football fans saw that yesterday the guy that cold-cocked his wife in an elevator in February got a 2-game suspension, and now all of a sudden the video from the inside of the elevator went viral, and he has been dropped from the team and indefinitely suspended from the NFL. My point is that they were engaged at the time. They're married now. And I'm going, holy man, why did she go ahead and marry some guy that knocks her unconscious and drags her out of the elevator and then just leaves the limp, unconscious body laying there? So we got to set the boundaries and say, hey, no, that's not acceptable. Not now, not ever, not under any circumstances. Which brings us to another one, which is further down the list. Call it whatever you want to call it. We need to agree on how we're going to disagree, argue, have fights. What are the rules? I mean, you go to a boxing match and there's rules for that. There's rules for fighting. There's rules for everything. What are your rules? How are you going to fight? How are you going to disagree? How are you going to resolve it? Why do we fight? In my mind, it's because our ego gets control of us. I'm going to have it my way. You didn't fulfill my expectations. And we go on, and we know that's set up for failure, isn't it? And A Course in Miracles says, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And I've asked that question many times, and I've had an engineer say, I'd rather be right. But I think for most of us, most of the time, we would rather be happy. Now, here's the problem. We get caught up in being happy versus being right. And I have this problem all the time. I really only want to be happy. But Rosemary will say something, and it just, wah! You know, I go nuts, and go, rah, 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 you know, and before I realize it, I'm fighting to be right. I really don't care if I'm right. And my challenge is to be able to get control over my ego and say, we're not playing that game. And I used to get mad. Years ago, I'd get mad and I'd be mad for a week. Now, when I'm, you know, we're having our little tryst or whatever it's called, I'm going, I don't want to do this. I don't want this to happen. So we got to be consciously aware of what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I would say that the more consciously aware we are, the better our life is going to be no matter what we're talking about. When we can question everything that goes on and say, wait a minute, is this how I want to react from the highest good, the best for me and everybody involved? Or am I just allowing my ego to turn around and, you know, it's got to be my way, I'm the boss, I'm the this, I'm the that? No. We got to let all that stuff go because none of that stuff works. So setting boundaries is a show I wanted to do a whole show on. So if you want me to do a whole show on setting boundaries, let me know. Again, I'm at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. The next one I have here is to give your partner 100% of your attention. Now, this is hard on both sides. And the first time it happened to me was with Tony Robbins. It was 1988, and he was preparing to give a weekend seminar, and I was working for a company that taught people that own small businesses how to run their business, and I went up to him because it was 6:30, and we were supposed to start at 6:30, and there's a line all the way down the hallway to register, and here he's going to have a whole weekend with 300 people, and I went up on the riser in the back of the room and talked to him, sat down, and he clamped in on me. And no, regardless of the fact that he was going to spend 20 hours a day for the next 3 days with 300 people preparing us to walk on hot coals, he totally locked in on me. Giving another person 100% of your attention is a great gift. What we're doing here is we're talking about listening and how most of us listen to respond, not to understand, but to respond. And I was talking to a guy at the gym this morning, and I didn't even stop to breathe, and he starts saying something. He says, hold on, let me finish my story or I'll forget it. He says, I thought you were finished. And we do that, but how many of these stories does anybody remember? So we need to listen as a gift of love. And if I'm going to give you a gift of love, and I know Shannon may still be tuned in, and I'll just use you as an example, Shannon. I'll say, okay, honey, She's not my honey, okay? Shannon, when we're talking about this issue, what do you want from me? Do you want me to just listen so you can get it off your chest? Do you want me to help you solve the problem? Do you want me to hug you? Do you want me to hold you? You know, tell me what role you want from me as you tell me about this. And most all of us can say, I can do that. But as a man, most of the time what we want to do is solve the problem. Now, a lot of women want to do the same thing. But if that's not what I want, we aren't communicating, are we? And I'm jumping around here. I have these things in different orders. It doesn't make a difference. Communication is the responsibility of the person communicating. So if I'm talking, it's my responsibility for you to know and to understand what I'm trying to communicate to you. In other words, I want to communicate in a way that I can't be misunderstood. Which means what? We got to keep it simple. We got to keep it short. I think I've told you before, I know I'm going to die from terminal diarrhea of the mouth. So I don't do real well at keeping it short. I can get up in front of an audience for 6 hours. No problem at all. When I belong to the local chapter of the National Speakers Association, they'd have a contest every year for 3-minute talk. Are you kidding? I can't say hi in 3 minutes. So it's a matter of learning how to listen, how to respond. Remember, what we're talking about is love. And love is a gift. And you need to find out from the other person, what kind of gift would you like me to give you right now? When we go out and buy something for their birthday or anniversary or Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, many times we say, what would you like? Well, why would this be any different? You're giving him or her the gift of your love by listening. Find out what it is that they want from you as you're listening. These things are easy, but doing them is sometimes a challenge. The next thing I have on my list is to commit yourself to making this relationship the most important relationship of your life. Period. And again, I'm assuming I'm talking about a marriage. So your work cannot be number one. Your children cannot be number one. Your marriage has to be number one. They have to be number two and three. Because if work comes first, you know, well then everything, you know, you can make all kinds of excuses for why you can't do this now and all that kind of thing. But this relationship requires constant attention because it's constantly changing, growing, or shrinking, and you need to commit yourself to it. If you want love and you want the love to work, then you got to work at the love. It isn't just going to happen. So make this marriage, this relationship, your number one priority. Next thing I have here is, this is real simple. Look for things to compliment each other on every day. Now, some of you ladies aren't going to like what I'm about to say, but ladies, you really are hard to give a compliment to a lot of times. You know, your hair looks great. You look beautiful today. Love your dress. It's gorgeous. And, oh, that's the whole thing. I'd say, oh, that's a new blouse, I'll say to Rosemary. Oh, I've had it for 2 years. That's the first time I've seen it. Help me out here. I'm trying to compliment you. So give us a chance, whether we're men or women. And doesn't it feel good when someone tells you and recognizes and appreciates you? I do this all the time. When I see a person, see somebody that had pink, she had a bright pink shirt on and bright pink shoelaces. I said, do you change your shoelaces every time you put on a different color shirt? And what are you doing? You're acknowledging that you noticed that she's color coordinated. Now, a lot of people are not color coordinated. We've seen people with checks and stripes and colors that you make you want to think that they dressed in the dark. Well, obviously, it's not important to them, so that's fine. But acknowledge that in a person. Nobody, and I am willing to stick my neck out on this one, nobody has ever died from an overdose of compliments or an overdose of love. So there's nothing wrong. There is no risk in loving and complimenting other people. Whether we're talking about our children, our spouse, our parents, our siblings, our boss, it doesn't make any difference who we're talking about. Very few people are so secure that they're totally comfortable and loving about themselves. Now, a lot of times, again, men, oh, you know, they're too brusque. I know. Don't tell me about that stuff. Well, we were brought up to say, boys, don't cry, you know, and all these things that we were told when we were little kids, and we believed them when we were little kids, and they may have been true when we were little kids, but now we got to look back at our beliefs and say, does this work for me now? And if not, let's dump it. We don't need it. Next thing I have is to be grateful and to express our gratitude all the time. You know, you don't just say, hey, thanks for going to work every day. Thanks for doing the laundry. Thanks for cooking the dinner. Thanks for doing the groceries. Thanks for this. Thanks for paying the bills, whatever it is. And then you don't say it again forever and ever. And you just keep telling each other, Jim, really grateful that you do this or do that. Because what it does is we live in a world that says what is valued is your left brain analytical self. So most of us are in our head almost all the time. And when we get complimented or told that we're appreciated, loved, that somebody's grateful for us, what does it do? It takes us out of our head into our heart. There's a friend I have that I met 15 years ago, and she said something on Facebook yesterday about you know, asking God for peace and patience and love or something today. So I posted something, say, I give you patience, love, and peace. And then I said, I remember when we were together in this class that the teacher said, I know when you go from your head to your heart because you start to cry. Well, the way she put it apparently was her eyes leaked. I emailed that to her and I said, have you been into your heart lately and gone and gotten that little girl and hugged her and told her how proud you are of her and how much you love her? And she says back to you how proud she is of you and how many challenges and hurdles and obstacles you've overcome to be the person you are today. And she posted back, thank you. I forgot. I got into my heart and my eyes leaked. This is what we're here to do. How much time did it take of my day? 30 to 45 seconds to help her reconnect to her heart, to who she is. We have to help each other. Which brings me to the next one, which is almost the same as what we're talking about. We need to be kind to each other. In my point of view, we're here to do two things. We're here to take care of each other, and we're here to heal the pain from the past. And sometimes we're the person being taken care of, and sometimes we're the person taking care of somebody. But we need to look at that and say, hey, let's take care of ourselves. Let's take care of each other. Let's love each other. Let's forgive each other. Let's help each other. Let's get rid of the pain from the past. So let's be kind to each other. Obviously, if we're being kind, we're going to be considerate, aren't we? I don't have to have it my way all the time. Why? Because my ego says I got to have it my way? Well, again, when you hear the voice of the ego, the voice of the ego is the voice that says, I want to take you out of a place of peace. And as they say in Italian, into a place of agita, where you're stirring up all the stuff. Or, you know, you'll excuse this expression, but stirring the shit pot up. And we know people who do that all the time. But my mom used to say, hey, it takes two to tango. So if I don't play your game, what good does it do you if you're playing the game? But we need to be considerate of each other. Every single one of us has problems. Every one of us. All 100% of the people alive in the world today have problems. We need to be tolerant. We need to be tolerant of each other. We know that there is nobody else in the world who sees life the way you see it. So simply tolerate other people's point of views, just like a belly button. We all have a belly button, okay? We all have a point of view. Let's just tolerate each other's point of view and know that every single person you're ever going to encounter in your entire life is going to be different than you. So let's tolerate each other because we each have shortcomings. Going back again to the beginning, life is messy. So naturally, love being part of life, and the biggest part of life, love is messy. So I talked about earlier, talking about when we talk and when we listen, just a reminder, when you are interacting with each other, seek to understand. Not to be understood, but for you to understand what I'm saying, or for me to understand what you're saying. Seek to understand. It is important that I'm understood. I want to understand you because I have a gift of love that I want to give to you, and I want to know what it should look like, what it's wrapped in, what it feels like. And I need you to be vulnerable and share that with me. How many of you who are married date each other? Ta-dum, ta-dum! What a concept, right? We need to take turns deciding who's, you know, if you do a weekly date, this week I set the date, next week you set the date, and the one who sets the date gets to do what he or she wants. And when you first start doing that, more likely than not, you're going to do what you want, and your partner's going to do what he or she wants. And then after a while, that's going to flip-flop. I'm going to set something up to do what you want, and you set something up to do what I want. Guess what? Include your kids in this. You have a business meeting, and I call you, and I say, Mary, can we get together at 4 o'clock? And you say, no, I have a meeting. Well, why can't you say that? You know, you don't have to say that meeting is with my wife. It's with my oldest child, my youngest. Set a date. And do you have to spend money? No, you don't have to spend money. What are you going to do? You're going to give that person the gift of your attention. How many of you have dogs? Every single morning, we have a boxer named Precious. When I go downstairs, she's taking her head and she's hitting me in the leg or hitting me in the hand, saying, hey, pay attention to me, Jim. Please pay attention to me. Love me. Stroke me, whatever it is, you know, and we just do that. How hard is it? Ta-da-da-da-da, so date each other. I'm going to say another number one here is that we need to be flexible. If everything in this situation is I got to have it my way, well, then what are we doing? We're setting ourselves up for failure. We're setting ourselves up to be rigid. And anybody with any understanding of life at all knows we don't get it our way. Before I had a business of my own, I used to think, well, if I own my own business, I'm the boss, and I get to have it my way. Ha, 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 man, was I wrong. I'd interview someone and say, hey, you're the one I want to hire, and call you and say, you know, I'm offering you the job, and you say, well, somebody else is offering me another job. Huh. Or I offer you a job, you accept the job, and then you show up for a week and then go find another job. Or somebody else offers you another job. So we need to be able to be flexible. Simple as that. Life is not going to work the way we want it to be. We have to be able to adjust to an ever-changing set of circumstances. Let's just assume for a moment that life is a card game. And we're playing poker. Use poker because it goes fast. I used to play euchre when I was in college. Another one that goes fast, and you get dealt the hand of cards, which is called life, which is called today. You got to play the cards that you're dealt, and you keep getting dealt a different hand of cards. That's called life. And in order for you to optimize the love, the joy, the sense of peace in life, you have to adjust to an ever-changing set of circumstances. You can never get it your way. You know, you have expectations for this is how life works. It isn't going to work that way. And my chapter in a book with Jack Canfield, that's what my chapter is about. Life according to me. Life is not going to work according to the way you want it to work. So it's your job, if you want to have a happy, joyous, peaceful life filled with love, to be flexible, to adjust to the circumstances that are constantly changing. So you got down on your list to go out and buy your rose-colored sunglasses. Hey, how about the next one? How about being playful? How many of you play? Play whatever you want to play. Play a card game, play a board game, just play with each other. Rosemary, I'm telling you, she is so ticklish. All I have to do is point my tickle finger, which is my index finger, toward her armpit, and she'll squirm around like a little bitty kid. Which reminds me, I saw something on Facebook recently of four little babies, and the dad built something where they're all sitting inside of it, and he would just shake his head, blah, 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 and the babies would laugh hysterically. So anybody, I'm sure it's on YouTube, anybody who wants a good laugh, needs a good laugh, go to YouTube, find it, and if you're in any way, shape, or form involved with people who are sick, get that, make a copy of it, and bring it to people in nursing homes or hospices or wherever. Because to listen to these four little babies just laughing hysterical, you know, we got to laugh. We got to play. This stuff of grow up. The worst thing is you go to a grocery store and somebody says to their kid, hey, stop acting like a 10-year-old. And they want to say, well, what do you want me to act like? I'm 10. You know, play. Play with kids. Kids will get you out of this serious stuff. If you don't have any kids around, I'm sure you can find somebody who'll let you babysit their kids and have fun with them. Or you can volunteer. I think one of the biggest, the biggest cause of trouble in a marriage is expecting your spouse to fulfill all your wants and needs, making them the one who is the source of your happiness. Doesn't work that way. You need to have your life, she needs to have, or her, he, she needs to have their life, and then you come together. And while you're at it, you got to make sure to nurture yourself. And the most important time and the least probable time of somebody nurturing themselves is when they're under stress. And you got to be able to nurture yourself and take care of yourself. You got to be able to come with a full tank of gas. Next one here is, we talked about this, so I'm going to skip that. Let each other know constantly that you're a team. You got to get this. You got to tell each other, we're a team. No matter what happens, we'll get through this together. Don't ever, 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 ever think you're alone. You're a couple, you're a team. You're a family, you're a team. You have to deal with these issues. Life is going to throw us stuff that's horrible, absolutely horrible. We went to a funeral of Rosemary's former boss, his 5-year-old daughter. It was the most gut-wrenching thing I've ever done in my whole life. A 5-year-old. It was just terrible. Who would ever expect to bury their 5-year-old? So if you have little ones at home, when you go out, spend time together. Don't be having that doggone, what do they call those things, iPhones with you. You don't know how long you're going to have each other. We always assume that your kids are going to grow up, they're going to get married, and you're going to be at their wedding, you're going to have grandchildren from. No, it doesn't work that way. Children get sick. There's all kinds of things. Spouses get sick. My cousin Jack, born the same month as I was. He's got colorectal cancer and prostate cancer. He's in a hospice. Tears my heart out. I haven't seen him since I got married, but it doesn't make any difference. We all have to deal with these kinds of things. Middle age to me is taking care of your parents and taking care of your children. You got to deal with that. When mom and dad, many of us tend to take a snapshot of mom and dad and expect that that's the way they're going to be forever. And it doesn't work that way. You know, moms and dads, we get old, okay? And, you know, we're not going to, somehow we think that we're going to have perfect health forever, too. And that doesn't happen. And one of these days, it's going to, you know, may diminish. I'm hoping that I die in my sleep or have a heart attack or something like that. That's, you know, I put in my order. But most people don't die that way. So we've got to deal with this as a team. We're going to have health issues. We're going to have death issues. We're going to have financial problems. I mean, hey, what do we do with financial problems? We're like accordion players. We've all had more money. Accordion comes out, less money. We got to expand and contract based upon what our circumstances. What was the hand that you were dealt now? The hand that you're dealt now says we got less money. Okay, let's adjust to it. What can we do that we don't have to do? We've talked many shows on forgiveness, and I think that the two words should be I don't know what do they call that when they tie the words together. It should be love forgiveness. You know, you can't have one without the other. Love means we're going to have to forgive. Every single one of us is constantly doing things that are stupid, that are thoughtless, that we, you know, we blurted something out. We were inconsiderate. We were angry. We were frustrated. We say things. We do things that we regret. And so we have to forgive each other. We have to forgive ourselves. And we have to let go of the past. It's simple as that. Again, this stuff is simple, but it's not easy because it means that we have to change the way that we were doing things. And we have to decide what is the most important thing in my life. If the most important thing is for me to be happy, to share this love, to share this joy, then I got to let go of these things that just don't work, that don't add to more joy, to more peace, to more happiness, to more love. So let's make one of our items here, living in peace, being a top priority. Now all this stuff that stirs the pot up again is not going to bring us peace. So we got to recognize when we're being pulled out of a place of peace and say, no, I got to get back there. I want you to look at this like the place of peace is the eye of the hurricane. And as long as you stay in the eye of the hurricane, you're in a total place of peace. As soon as you move out of the eye of the hurricane, getting further and further away from the hurricane, from the eye of the hurricane, the more you're getting sucked into the hurricane, and it'll kill you. It'll absolutely kill you. Because it's got torrential rain, you know, winds 90 to 150 miles an hour. So we have to be consciously aware that the most important thing in our life is peace. There's, you know, I talked about this a little bit, but I want to expand on it a little bit more. There's not another human being in all of existence that sees life the way you do. So be open to seeing it the way your partner sees it. There's a saying, life is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So we need to be open to the other person's point of view. You can say, you don't have to agree with it. Gee, I never thought of that before. Or gee, that's another way to look at it. Something that's just been coming to me in the last 2 to 3 years has been to be compassionate. And I'm finding that compassion is a huge, huge aspect of life or ingredient necessary for us to be able to be there for and with each other. Every single one of us is carrying a bag full of problems. I don't know what your problems are, but I can be compassionate with you. I can be understanding. I like to tell a story. This is a Stephen Covey story of a man that gets on a bus, and he's got a son that's 10 and a daughter that's 8. And he sits down next to you. And his kids sit down in front of him. And as soon as he sits down, he falls asleep. And as soon as he falls asleep, his, you know, the son starts poking his daughter. She pokes him back. And then they start yelling at each other. And the son pulls her hair. And then she hits him. And then they get up and they start running up and down the aisle. And they're bumping into people and knocking into their papers and basically creating havoc. And finally, you can't handle it anymore. And you nudge me and you say, "Sir, would you mind doing something about your children?" And the guy opens his eyes and he looks and he says, "Oh yeah, I guess I better. You see, we just came from the hospital 2 hours ago where their mother died. Now, did you have a shift in the way you saw those kids? From the way I was describing their behavior, their boisterousness, to, oh my God, their mom just died. They're 8 and 10. Their mom just died 2 hours ago. Certainly they're going to behave like that. Totally understandable. That's compassion. And we can have compassion without knowing the details. All we got to know is every one of us has problems. Life is never without problems. So have compassion. Here's one that I work on. I have a PhD in patience, and I'm doing postdoctoral work, and I still have trouble with being patient. So being patient, in my opinion, is one of the most important things we can do. We have to be patient. We have to be patient with ourselves. We have to be patient with each other. And again, we got to be patient with our children, we got to be patient with our parents, patient with our husband or wife, with the people we work with. Being impatient isn't going to change it. Getting all bent out of shape in a traffic jam is not going to make the traffic move one bit faster. Matter of fact, if you want to have more fun in traffic jams, go to a magic shop and for about $3 you can get a great big red nose. When you get stuck in traffic, put the nose on. You know, everyone's going along one car length at a time, and somebody's going to look over at you, and they're going to have a good time. You'll have a great time in a traffic jam. But anyway, that's off the topic. Being patient. I only have three more things here. The next thing is to be understanding. Okay? We have to be understanding of each other. I don't know how your life is. Like I said, we've been married for 47 years. She goes here, I go there. We both have totally different ways. I don't have any problem at all getting in front of 100 or 1,000 people. Most people, "Oh my God, that's terrible. I would freak out," you know. Not for me. Yet when it comes to fixing something, forget it. You know, I'll call a handyman, I'll call a plumber, I'll call this, I'll call that. That's not my thing. I don't fix a car. I'll take it tomorrow morning because something's wrong with it. And as soon as I get off the phone here, I'll call and you know, remind Lon. Anyway, so we need to be understanding. I mentioned earlier about we have to set the rules for how we're going to argue, fight, disagree, whatever we want to call it. And we've got to come to a compromise. Okay, how does this work for both of us? We've talked in other shows about, what do we need to do? We need to be able to be flexible, and we can't be right. We have to be able to say, hey, what's the compromise here? How does this work? What can both of us live with? And go back and forth. It's like a negotiation. Life is a never-ending negotiation. When you think you got to have it your way, it doesn't work. Look at Congress. How totally they all ought to be fired, every single one of them, as far as I'm concerned. Fire them all. They're not doing their job. Anyway, the last thing I have here is to be effusive in your praise. Okay? Again, nobody's ever died from being praised too much. Nobody's ever died from being told how proud you are of them, of what they do, of how they do it, of how, you know, and you can fill in the blank. Be effusive in your praise. The closing quote I have today is that love is friendship that has caught fire. It is quiet understanding. It is mutual confidence. It is sharing and forgiving. It is loyal through good and bad times. It settles for less than perfection, and it makes allowances for human weaknesses. And those who are old enough know Ann Landers. That was her story, or her quote. The closing story today is, a man's name was Fleming, and he was a poor Scottish farmer. One day, while he was trying to make a living for his family, he heard a cry for help coming from a nearby bog. Obviously, this is in the 19th century. I was going to say the last century, but that would have been the 20th century. He dropped his tools and ran to the bog. There, mired to his waist in black muck, was a terrified boy screaming and struggling to free himself. Farmer Fleming saved the lad from what would have been a slow and terrifying death. The next day, a fancy carriage pulled up to the Scotsman's sparse surroundings. An elegantly dressed nobleman stepped out and introduced himself as the father of the boy Farmer Fleming had saved. "I want to repay you," said the nobleman. "You saved my son's life." "No, I can't accept payment for what I did," the Scottish farmer replied, waving off the offer. At that moment, the farmer's own son came to the door of the family hovel. "Is this your son?" the nobleman asked. "Yes," the farmer replied proudly. "I'll make you a deal. Let me provide him with the level of education my own son will enjoy. If the lad is anything like his father, he'll no doubt grow to be a man we'll both be proud of." And that's what he did. Farmer Fleming's son attended the very best schools and in time graduated from St. Mary's Hospital Medical School in London and went on to become known throughout the world as Sir Alexander Fleming, the discoverer of penicillin. Years afterwards, the same nobleman's son who was saved from the bog by Farmer Fleming was stricken with pneumonia. What saved his life? Penicillin. The name of the nobleman? Lord Randolph Churchill. His son's name? Sir Winston Churchill. Someone once said, what goes around comes around. So I say to you, work like you don't need the money. Love like you've never been hurt. Dance like nobody's watching. And sing like nobody's listening. Live like it's heaven on earth. That's pretty much the show, but I'm going to wrap up by saying once again that next week, Terry Cole Whitaker is going to be our guest. We'll be on for as long as we need to be on. I ask you to please join us. And then the second thing is, once again, I'll be speaking on a 7-day Mexican Riviera cruise called The Spirit of Love, and it's on a Princess ship. It's February 14th to the 21st. It's round trip from Los Angeles. Go to www.lovecruise2015.com for the details and sign up, and it would be great to spend a week together. As always, I end by saying, I send love from my heart to your heart. I ask you to receive this love and then share it. There's an infinite supply of love. We have to be lovers, willing to give love and to receive love from each other. Love is what makes the world go round. I love you, and I thank you for being here today. Bye-bye, and as the saying goes, I'll see you next Tuesday, September 16th at 2 Pacific time. If you're in Australia, I don't know what time that is. If you're in Europe, I don't know what time that is either. Thanks. Goodbye.